Hello everyone and welcome to Memcast. My name is Dr. Rachel Saville and I'm your host today. I'm joined again this week by Dr. Richard Bowman, who's one of our acute medicine registrars here in the East Midlands. If you remember last week, we talked about the chest pain NICE guidance, CG95. And in that guidance, we talked about how you can risk stratify patients and where they should be seen, what initial tests and investigations you can do to either confirm or exclude ACS. And now we're going to talk about those patients that we've got that we've been able to exclude ACS and what we then need to do with those sort of people. So hi Rich, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, happy to be back on this sunny Sunday afternoon. So hopefully the first part was useful to either people potentially going into careers where they might have to deal with this in a community setting, or potentially taking calls to support shared decision making with community colleagues and reassuring them that actually, maybe because the pain's so many hours old, that actually it's okay for them to be dealt with where they are. So if you have diagnosed an ACS syndrome, acute coronary syndrome, as part of all that process, then obviously NICE will have a different guideline to be telling you what to do with your aspirin and your analgesia. And so this is really part two. We've ruled out all the acute stuff and we've sent the people to hospital that need to go to hospital. So we're still left with patients with chest pain that is new, but we're suspecting that it's got a cardiac origin. So really what we're talking about here is stable chest pain, that although it's new for the patient, it's not acute from our perspective as the clinicians. So NICE really here talks about different categories of people again, and we've got sort of three different categories and how you would manage these people. So the first thing I think that we need to just remind ourselves about is, what is stable angina and really what is typical presentation for stable angina? So because NICE is a management guideline, they don't really go into the pathophysiology of what it is too much. But as we all know, angina is essentially claudication of the heart muscle. So I sometimes find it helpful to remember that, you know, the blood vessels feeding the heart in some ways are similar to the blood vessels feeding your leg. So if you had a narrowing of a blood vessel in your leg and it was a fixed narrowing, then when you climb the stairs, you're leg muscle's going to hurt, and when you stop, it's going to not hurt as much. So you really got that claudication in relation to the activity level. So anything that's going to make the heart have to work a bit harder, the chest pain's going to come, and then anything where the heart can relax a bit, it's going to relax. So really what we're talking about here is a stable, fixed disease of the coronary artery system. So the first question you should probably ask yourself is, has this person got known coronary artery disease? So how do we know if they've got coronary artery disease? Well, they might have had a test in the past. They might have had an angiogram for some other reason. Maybe they had valvular heart disease and someone did an angiogram on them. Maybe they did some non-invasive testing on them. Or maybe they actually had an event in the past, like a heart attack, that was properly diagnosed with troponins and ECGs and history and all that stuff, and that's on their medical record. Well, then we know they've got coronary artery disease, don't we? Because they've had a complication of their coronary artery disease. So even if maybe they had that MI 10 years ago and they haven't had angina since that, but we do know they've got coronary artery disease because they had an event related to it. So what NICE says, that if this person has got known coronary artery disease, either because of a test or because of an event that had to be caused by it in the past, and they've got what they describe as typical features of stable angina, well, then really the pathway stops there. You can just make a diagnosis of stable angina. You don't need a cardiologist, don't need any more tests, and you just make the diagnosis of stable angina, and then you can manage this patient as stable angina.
And you mentioned typical symptoms of unstable angina. What are they?
Yes, and NICE are quite helpful with this, actually. So they give us a three-point definition. So if you have all of these three things, then you can make a diagnosis of typical angina. And therefore, if you've combined that typical angina with known coronary artery disease, you can make a diagnosis of stable angina. So the three points are pain that is precipitated by physical exertion, relieved by rest or GTN within 5 minutes, and the pain in the chest spreads to either the neck, jaw, or arms. Doesn't matter which arm, can be left or right. So if you've got all those three things, so you've got your chest pain, and then you've got radiation to neck, jaw, or arms, worse on exertion, better with rest or GTN within 5 minutes, then you've got all three, that is typical. And they actually then say that if you've got two of the three, then you can say it's atypical, but still angina. And if you've got naught or one, then it's non-anginal chest pain.
Okay. And what sort of things would make a diagnosis of stable angina unlikely?
Yeah, so nice help us here a little bit as well. So they've said that if it's unrelated to activity and associated with other things such as dizziness, palpitations, tingling in your arms or legs, or perhaps swallowing problems, then that makes stable angina unlikely. But also if it's related or brought on by deep breathing, then, and unrelated to activity, then again is probably not stable angina. So that's our first category. So known coronary artery disease, either because we've seen it on a test or they've had a complication such as an MI, and then you've got all three symptoms, typical symptoms, you can make a diagnosis of stable angina, and then you're done.
Okay. So what are we going to do if they haven't got that prior history or those prior investigations and they've not got confirmed coronary artery disease, but they sound like they've got typical angina symptoms?
Yeah. So this is this group that you're pretty convinced that they've got angina, stable angina, because they've got all the three symptoms, but they haven't had a test before, or they haven't had an event before. Well, that's pretty straightforward then, isn't it? That we need to do a test to see if they've got coronary artery disease. Because if we prove that they've got coronary artery disease, if we combine that with their now typical angina symptoms, then we can just move them back into category one and make a diagnosis. The rest of the guideline kind of talks about all these complicated tests that you've probably seen ordered locally, and you're not quite sure why different people have ordered different tests. And again, going back to what we talked about last week about how there might be local variation here, because it's not just about what NICE say, it's about what's available locally. But what NICE says is that if you want to screen for coronary artery disease, the best test to use is a CT coronary angiogram. So remember, this is not telling you necessarily what is causing this patient's symptoms. So if you're not convinced that it's angina, screening for coronary artery disease isn't going to help you. But if you want to screen for coronary artery disease, CT coronary angiogram. And that's either going to prove that they've got coronary artery disease, or it's going to prove that they don't have coronary artery disease, which then allows you to exclude stable angina and think about other things.
And what if it's not clear cut? What if you have your CT coronary angiogram and it's not obvious whether you can exclude it or they've definitely got coronary artery disease? What can you do?
Yeah, so in a small number of cases, maybe the CT coronary angiogram might not give you the answer, and that might be a technical issue. Maybe the dye didn't quite go through the patient as we expected, or maybe there was a problem with the reporting or something like that. But then they would move you on to this different category of test, which is a group of tests called functional imaging. And that leads on quite nicely to category three of people, which is people who've got confirmed coronary artery disease, but you're actually not sure what's causing their symptoms. So this is the other time where you would use functional imaging. So either you haven't been able to successfully screen, which will be a small number of people with the CTPA, but actually this second group of people that actually you already know they've got coronary artery disease because they've had an MI in the past, say, or something. So there's no point re-screening them. That's just going to repeat the information that you already know. What you actually need is you need some different type of information about what the heart, because maybe they've only got two of three of those typical symptoms. So the first line would be a functional imaging test, and there are different types of those.
Yeah. So what different things can we do for functional imaging? What options have we got there?
So it's important to remember that these are different than the CT coronary angiogram. even though some of them use CT as a modality. So there's really sort of three main types that you can opt for. And NICE really doesn't distinguish between these in terms of clinical efficacy. There might be nuanced reasons why a cardiologist might choose one over the other, maybe to do with chronic kidney disease, or maybe they're looking for a specific type of coronary artery disease, because some of them use, well, they all use contrast, so they differ different chronic kidney disease restrictions. But the three main types are a myocardial perfusion scintigraphy with single photon emission CT, and that's abbreviated to MPS, myocardial perfusion scan. And we usually don't mention the last bit, which is SPECT. So the CT in SPECT tells us that actually it's a CT scan that we're doing. But again, different to that CT coronary angiogram that we talked about earlier. And because it's functional imaging, it's a dynamic test. So we're going to use a stressing agent. Sometimes you might use exercise to stress the heart, but actually it's probably a more controlled to use a stressing drug such as adenosine or dobutamine whilst you're doing that scan. Another functional imaging is a stress echo. So again, you might use exercise or dobutamine to stress the heart whilst doing this ultrasound test to see how the heart's behaving under stress. See if we're seeing that visual correlation with their symptoms. So they're telling us they kind of got this kind of claudication type syndrome, but we're not quite sure, but we can watch it under a dynamic test. And then the last type of functional imaging is a first pass contrast MRI scan, again with exercise or dobutamine as a stressing agent, and that's abbreviated to a cardiac MR. So just to recap there, so this is different to a CT coronary angiogram. These are functional images that we use when we already know they've got confirmed coronary artery cancer, so there's no point screening for it again, and it's either an MPS, stress echo, or cardiac MR.
Okay, and if we can't do any of those tests for whatever reason, they're not available or the patient isn't suitable, what other things could we do to investigate this third type of patient?
Yeah, so again, these are patients where there's no point screening for coronary arteries because we already know what we're going to find, and we're not quite sure what to do next. So really, this is a cardiology decision. But what NICE is saying is that there are some second and third line options here, but they're not as good. So you can locally choose which of that first group you want to, you know, which machine you want to buy, and, you know, maybe there's patient factors that might select one over the other. There's other tests that we can use to answer that question, but only if that functional imaging either is contraindicated clinically or hasn't given us the answer yet. So the second line might be an exercise ECG. Now, this is not as good as that first group of functional imaging, but still is there. And one of the reasons that might be is because the DVLA guidance hasn't quite caught up with NICE. So the DVLA for lorry drivers still specifically say exercise ECG. So it's still kind of in there as part of the NICE guidelines as an option. But NICE are now clearly saying that we've got better tests than this. And then third line to that would be an invasive angiogram. We're not using this invasive test to screen for coronary artery disease. This is people that we're not quite sure what's going on. They've got some kind of atypical angina type syndrome, but it is there as a third line option. If we really haven't been able to find out what's going on with this patient, we would then proceed to an invasive test to actually image their coronaries.
Okay, thanks for that. So what do we do with the results of these tests?
I guess the first possibility is that we've gained enough information to make a diagnosis, and this really be the chest pain clinic that's made this diagnosis, and then they would either start some management and discharge back to their GP, or maybe they want to consider other interventions, non-drug interventions to manage their coronary artery disease. And that's really something that's covered in a different NICE guideline. But I guess in terms of interpreting these tests, they do have something to say on what they would say is a significant coronary artery, because you might have a little bit of stenosis on these tests, but is that significant or not? So NICE has something to say about that as well. So they would define significant coronary artery disease on a CT coronary angiogram as a stenosis of greater than 70% or greater than 50% in the left anterior descending artery. But they do recognize that clinically you might bend those figures a little bit depending on your patient, because there might be other factors that might make your findings on the test a little bit more or less relevant. So obviously blood flow through those coronary arteries might not just be being affected by physically how blocked that artery is. There's other things that might be either making it worse or better. So we can run through these sort of quickly, but you probably can think of them yourself. So obviously, if you're anemic or if you've got some coronary spasm, then the fixed stenosis is going to be there, but you're going to deliver less blood supply to that distal myocardium. And then you've got increased demand of the heart, so periods of tachycardia or left ventricular hypertrophy. And then there are some nuanced bits of the actual individual anatomy. If you've got a particularly large stenosis, quite proximal, there might also be factors that might make those definitions of 70%, 50% clinically different. And the obvious one would be if they've got very good collaterals, because if your blood supply to the heart is well preserved through alternative routes, then having a stenosis that looks big on a test, clinically, it doesn't matter as much because you've got this collateral secondary blood supply. But then also, maybe the bit of heart that stenosis is feeding has already died. So there's actually less demand coming downstream, and that's no longer viable. So again, just to make that clear, so we're talking about angina, which is an ischemic syndrome, so pain that gets worse when you activate the heart and exercise and then goes away. So that's not damaging the heart muscle. But if you've got this second event that actually has caused a damage and they have had a previous MI in that territory where the stenosis is present, that might mean that actually that stenosis isn't that relevant because that vessel is now not that relevant. That's probably a point to kind of bring it round to a close. So I guess what we've talked about in this second part is mainly stable angina and how patients would get their diagnosis of that. And just to recap briefly, is that if you've had coronary artery disease proven in the past, or you've had an event from coronary artery disease, that also proves that you've got it. And if you've got typical symptoms, then you just manage a stable angina. And there's a separate guideline on how to do that with drugs or stenting. If you've got typical symptoms, but you want to screen for coronary artery disease, then the best test to do that would be a CTCA, coronary angiogram. But that doesn't work if you know that it's going to already show you that they've got coronary disease. So if you've got these unclear patients where actually they've got some symptoms, but you just want some more information, then it would be those functional tests that we talked about earlier, an MPS, stress echo, or cardiac MR. And hopefully that would then allow you to make your diagnosis of stable angina.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Dr. Bowen, for talking to us today. If you guys haven't already, we've got a question of the week over on our Instagram page at mem.cast. Have a go at that and see if you get the right answer. We'll see you again next week on Memcast.